哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀呀呀嘿呀嘿，哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀呀呀嘿呀嘿。Elder Voices, a window to the past, a door to the future.
Ay, 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 ay.
My name is Georgiane Anasuga. I am 66 years old, and I grew up pretty much Shaktulik, Elam, Koyuk. Koyuk is my home now for the past 48 years. We moved from a village to another. And my father's work, he didn't have a trade per se, but found jobs where they were available. I think he found at the time we were living in Shaktulik, back in the early 50s, when he found work in a mining company, maybe, in Nome. I was too young to know. And then from Nome, we moved to Elam. And from Elam, I moved here after high school. I was sort of the middle child. I had one older sister, two older brothers, one younger sister, three younger brothers. It was kind of fun, hard at times, because the older ones always picked on the younger ones, and I had younger kids to pick on too. I was more sort of put to watching over the younger ones as my older siblings left the home. And when I left for high school, when I came back, I got married to my husband. He'd already had children then, so basically all my life, I've never been childless. I've always had kids around me. From my younger siblings, to my stepchildren, to my own children, to my adopted children, and then to my grandchildren. I remember trying to help my oldest brother, when he'd go hitch up the dogs to the sled. He's going to get wood. I'd want to tag along. I'd want to help, though I don't, for the life in me now, I don't know why I thought at age maybe 7 or 8 I'd be that big of a help. I'd probably be more of a hindrance, but I wanted to go so bad. And so he did take me once, and I tried to help as much as I could. I could carry your axe for you. So I did, and I swung it back and forth like a kid would, and it hit the back of my leg, and I got a big nasty cut that ended his willingness to take me anywhere. I did try cooking once when I was 12 years old at camp before we learned. I must have been 11, because that was before we moved here to Koyuk. At our camp, Mom and Papa had to go to Elam, and they told me to cook little ducks, pocket ducks is what they call them, cook them, and macaroni. And Mama had a stove at one of those 55-gallon drum half tank, and on top of that she had 4 milk cans, and on top of that was a square 5-gallon can. That was the oven. The trick was to kind of regulate how much wood you put in the stove and how to keep it going. But she'd bake bread in that homemade oven, and I decided I would bake the ducks. I made a roaring hot fire in the stove and played and ran around with my younger brothers and sisters, played at camp. Every once in a while I'd go and throw a lot of wood in the stove. I kept it hot. going in. It was outside the tent, so it wasn't inside, and nobody noticed how hot it was. When it was done, I took them out, and the little ducks were now black pieces of charcoal and non-edible. I told my brothers and sister, that's okay, we'll have macaroni. I made the hot water and I cooked the macaroni, but we had run out of table salt, and Mama had rock salt, and I'd always seen her measure salt into the palm of her hand. Well, I measured rock salt into the palm of my hand and put it in the little dish of macaroni. And that was done, and we sat down to eat, and nobody could eat it because it was too salty. And I didn't want my mom and papa to know about the ducks that we were supposed to have eaten. I gave them to the dogs. And when they came home back to camp, Papa was gonna feed the dogs, and I could hear him chuckle, but I didn't think anything about it. And when he came to the tent, he spoke very quietly with my mom and told her what he saw in front of the dogs, because even the dogs didn't. That was one of my funny, happiest moments in life, I think. I remember when I was really little, I used to be able to speak Inupiaq fluently until I entered school. And English was, you had to speak English. And so I started, and even then, because of my older siblings, my parents were already speaking English in the home, however broken it was. But I grew up in an English-speaking home. And I could understand Inupiaq. My parents, when they conversed with each other, it was in Inupiaq. So they couldn't really tell stories that they didn't want me to know about, or any of my older brothers and sisters to know about. And for a while, my husband and I would speak in Inupiaq if we didn't want our kids to know what we were talking about. But with the little Inupiaq that they picked up here in the home and in the school, pretty soon we weren't able to do that anymore, because the kids are smart. They pick up a word here and a word there and somehow connect that in between together. I entered school, just a one-room school with all grades 1 through 8. And I remember, I think the years that I remember the most were the years that we lived in Elam, because I graduated from the 8th grade in Elam, where I graduated from Mount Edgecombe. It was different going away from home. I hadn't been away from the family before, except for one time when I was still in grade school. I had appendicitis, and back then they just put you in the plane and ship you to Nome. So at age 11, maybe, I was put on a gullwing by myself, flew into Nome, where I don't remember how I got to the hospital, but somebody must have brought me there, because they took my appendix out, and after maybe 2 weeks, I came back to Elam on a gullwing by myself. You don't know anything. I'd never been in an airplane before, and it was terrifying, terrifying. And then to land in Nome, to see things that I hadn't seen before, cars, roads, it was different. And I thought Nome was the biggest place I'd ever seen. And it was the biggest place until I went to Anchorage. After I graduated from high school, I wanted to be a nurse. That was my dream, to to become a nurse. But in high school, I was told that I didn't have what it took to go to nursing school. I was told that maybe a secretarial type school would be better for me. So I listened and I went to Haskell Institute. It was Haskell Institute then in Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas, where I went for 2 years and graduated from there. And I remember I used to be able to do dictation at 160 words per minute and transcribe it. But if you don't use the skills you were taught, you lose them. So I'm not able to do that anymore. After I graduated from Haskell in 1964, I came back here to Koyuk, got married, and ironically, maybe in 65 or 66, I began my work as a community health aide. Nursing was my dream, and I didn't pursue that, but as a community health aide, I was able to do a whole lot more than a registered nurse would. When I first started, it was more because they needed somebody to help, and I said I would. And from then, my feelings changed from just a job to, wow, I have this ability to help people that are ill or that need somebody to talk to or somebody to just understand them. So it became more rewarding to me to be able to help those people. The times that were the hardest were when we lost a patient, because as caregivers in the village, we were not given time to grieve, regardless of whether that patient was a family member or an extended family member. We weren't given time to grieve, so we had to come back to work the next day as if nothing happened. That was the hardest thing that I encountered. The most joy is seeing people, and after helping them, just a simple thank you. That made it all worthwhile. Just to have people say thank you. Two of my co-workers that I worked with for many years are still working in the clinic, one of them being one of my stepdaughters. She and I had a working relationship, like smooth clockwork-like. If I was on call and I needed her, she was there, and she knew of the things I needed done. I didn't have to tell her. And it was the same way. And if she's on call, she called me to help. I knew what she needed. And we never let our family differences come to work with us. When we went to work in the clinic, it was business. Our family difficulties, our family relationships, the ups and downs we endured in our families, that stayed at home. And then when we clocked out, when we went back to the family, the clinic stayed where it's supposed to stay. Then we were back to our families again. It is really important to be able to have somebody in the clinic that you trust, basically with your life. When I retired from the clinic, and actually I was 58 years old, I thought I still had time to go back to school and get a teaching degree as a second career, until I substitute taught for one of the teachers who teaches second and third grade, and that ambition flew out the window. No way was I going to go and teach the little kids. My own kids were bad at that age, but you have a whole classroom of them. I found out quickly that I'm not really a little people teacher. My title then was a teacher aide, and then the opening came for a bilingual bicultural teacher, which I took. That's where I started picking up my Inupiaq language again, trying to create curriculum for my students to try to teach them the Inupiaq language. And It wasn't easy because I didn't have any resource material. I had a dictionary that I used. I recognized words, I heard it in my language, I saw the word, and I adapted from their dialect to my dialect and made my teaching material from that. That went on for a year. Then I was asked to teach cultural awareness back away from what I was supposed to be doing as a bilingual biculture teacher. There's a lot of biculture stuff there, but my goal when I worked at the school was teaching the kids, the children, the Inupiaq culture before I taught them. Our culture is not the only one. Sure, they understand the Western culture because that's what's being taught now. But I wanted them to know where they came from, the Inupiaq culture. And that's what my main focus was on the Inupiaq culture. And then from there to the other cultures within the state of Alaska. It was difficult because there again, I had no resource material available. And not only that, I had to teach levels 1 through graduation level was 8. All the way from the little kids to high school, all levels. And having no instruction manual to go by, I had to learn how to go into the computer, learn how to find other resource material, go to the library, find what I could find there, gather what I could to fit that certain level and that standard. So basically I had to create levels 1 to 8 and kind of create my own teaching curriculum. The first graders, since a lot of them don't have the writing skills that they need, I had them draw pictures of the food we have, the food we eat. Not the food you buy from the store, but you get from the land. I had some great pictures of rabbits, caribou, and moose, fish, whatever that the kids ate, their favorite food, I had them draw. And that fit a standard, and that way I could say they did. And I kept a folder for each student so that I had proof that, yes, they did. That part of working in the school, I had trouble accepting, but I did it anyway. What I wanted was to be able to continue teaching the Inupiaq language, because we don't get it in the home. We don't speak Inupiaq. Even today, my husband and I don't speak it regularly. I'm not in ongoing conversations. And I think that's true in 98% of the homes. It's mainly English. And it's ironic because in the first place, when my parents and the older of our generation, the oldest, when we went to school, it was just, we couldn't. They were punished for speaking Inupiaq or their language. And now the schools have recognized that they've taken away a vital part of our culture, and they're trying to introduce it back into our culture, and that's good luck to them. I've heard it said time and again, it's the parents' responsibility to teach their children the language. But how, unless you're bilingual like in the island, where they have no trouble at all? At age 66, I think I'm a little too old now to start speaking Inupiaq to my little grandkids as they come in. Because they'll say, huh? When I was teaching the language, there was a positive response from the community. Once I was switched over to the cultural awareness, come Parent Teacher Day, I wasn't a certified teacher. I could not have parents come to me and have me talk to them about their students and where they're at in the cultural level, cultural awareness level. Another certified teacher did that. All the parents knew was that of what the students told them, what they did, and the grades that they received. It wasn't easy because in every class that I had kids in level 3, 4, 5, 6. I had multi-level in each class that I taught. And I learned a student may not be able to write well, where they have to pass certain standards in writing. In cultural awareness, I went mainly by sight and kind of made it more of what I thought the student would be able to perform the best at. Some of the work that they did as a group, I had them make maps with the Inupiaq names and colored them. I made them just for your creativity. I gave them a big sheet of paper. I said, okay, this is quick, now make a map. And oh, they loved it. And I had those maps hanging in the school. I don't know how to sew. My sewing abilities just consist of being able to patch up a hole. I sew people better than I sew fabric. Let's put it that way. Before I was switched to cultural awareness when I was still teaching, I learned how to work with yarn. So I taught my students how to crochet. I bought the needles and the yarn from the store out of my own money and started them. Some of them were, the beginning crafts were, you could tell somebody didn't know how to do it. But I kept all the pieces, I outlined each piece, and then I pieced it all together and made a big, like a mini afghan. And then out of felt, I backstitched the student's name and the grade they were in. And last I saw, it was still hanging at the school. And some of those first little squares that those kids did, I had them side by side. This is the first one, the second, and by the time they made their third or fourth one, they were just whipping them up and just as good and even better than I was. I was pretty amazed at how they picked it up. Even the guys, they crocheted. There were seven stepchildren. One lives in Unalakleet, the other lives in Nome. But the rest of the kids are here in the village. I never really tried to take the place of their mother. I was more like an older sister. I never tried to be the mother figure, so to speak. And I think that helped with my relationship with my stepchildren. By that time, we have 4 children together. I remember one of the ladies of the community, actually she was the pastor's wife, said, told me, don't have any children, because if I did have any children, his kids and our kids would fight all the time. Sure, they fought, but what brother and sister doesn't? I mean, not really fight, but argue and bicker and pick on each other. They did that, but no animosity or none of what I was told what would happen. We have 4 children. They're here except for 2. They're out of town. And then we adopted 4 more. Those kids that we adopted were children of either my stepchildren or our children, and I didn't want any child to be unloved and unwanted. So we took them. I'd never been childless since I was a child myself, so I couldn't imagine life without children. But now, the youngest of our adopted kids is 19, so we don't have any more little ones at here in the home, but we have our grandkids. They come around, and it's great because then you could spoil them and give them what we know we're not supposed to give them, and then send them back. Hasn't been easy. We've always taught our children right from wrong. I remember I spanked our kids, the four that we had. When I spank, I mean in a butt. I tried disciplining them, I mean my stepchildren, until one of them told their dad and told me I shouldn't do that. So my oldest son was great at it. You know you're not supposed to do this. And if I find out, you're going to get a spanking. And it's usually for, you don't pick fights with other kids. You don't tease girls. You don't, things kids growing boys like to do. But he did them anyway. And he found out that I knew what he had done. So as soon as he came home from school, he said, "Wait, Mom." He went into the bedroom, came back out, and he stooped. He said, "Okay," and he bent over. Whack! Oh, did that hurt. He went back and stuck a magazine or a book in under his pants. And that worked until they were too old for me to spank. And then it was restriction and talking to my adopted daughter. She spent almost her whole senior year in high school under restriction because she was still a minor, but she liked to smoke. And every time I caught her, it was 2-week restriction. She was grounded and she knew it, and until they become of age, 18. Then they make their own decisions. I'm not gonna interfere with them. And when they do wrong, they know it. They know the consequences. It hurts when they get in trouble with the law because they were taught right from wrong. And it's hard when they choose, when they make the wrong choice. It's happened to 3 of my sons. It's hard. But they all know that my love, our love for them, is unconditional. I may not agree with the choices you make, but I still love you and I always will love you. That's what they all know. But I like to think that I taught my kids how to respect authority, how to respect other people, and how to live with the consequences. But as a whole, they're good people. I think in all the villages, I think there's a certain degree of the younger generation now not showing respect to the elders as we did. Nobody broke curfew when I was growing up. Nobody stole. Nobody did the things that is so prevalent among the young people today. We had the elders taught us how to live and live right. And I think with the Western culture coming in, that kind of changed. Because if I saw another person's child doing wrong and I intervene, then the parents of that child will sic the law on me. Or child abuse, and that's wrong, I think. There's no one answer. There are a lot of other factors. When we started having TVs in the homes, other outside influences, You see advertisements for cigarettes, for booze, for sexual immorality, everything you could see on TV. Kids are exposed to that. And if you try to correct a child today, they're just going to backtalk or badmouth you. That makes me feel kind of bad. People don't go to church as often as we did. We went to church as families. If we went to church, our kids went to church, and they learned to sit down and not run around and scream and yell. Today, when some families go to church, their toddlers, the youngsters, are allowed to run all over. We weren't allowed to even bring a stick of chewing gum into church, not even a piece of candy. We were taught that church was a place of respect, and we sat and we listened.
You've been listening to Elder Voices, a production of KNOM.
If you are an elder or know an elder who would like to participate, call KNOM at 907-443-5221. Or write to KNOM Radio, Elder Voices, P.O. Box 988, Nome, Alaska, 99762. Thank you for listening to Elder Voices.